Darren Soule, welcome to the BX Podcast. It's great to have you here, mate.
Thank you, Robert. Nice to meet you, man. Nice to speak to you properly. I've been following your work for a long time, and it's the first time we're doing a show together.
It's going to be good fun. I've been looking forward to this one. As a little surprise for you, something that you probably don't know about me, I also run a photography and videography business as well.
Ah, that is a surprise, man. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to getting into that and riffing that a little bit with you for the audience here today on the BX Podcast. But before we get into any of that, why don't you just tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and let's get to know you a bit. Where are you from and how did you get here? What have you been doing it all for?
Oh, man. Okay, well, look, I've done lots of different things, but I'm from Sydney originally, born and bred in Sydney, in eastern suburbs. Love it here, close to the beach, close to Bondi. Born here, went to school here, lots of friends and family here. And I've done lots of things in my career, but over the last 6-7 years, I really started getting heavily into photography. It was a school passion of mine. I used to have certain cameras. I used to have a key to the dark room. When I was meant to be doing other things, I was in the dark room.
Whoa, you're dating yourself.
That's it, man.
People listening don't even know what a dark room is.
That's right. Nowadays, there's a piece of software called Lightroom.
There we go. It's the opposite.
It's the opposite now. The old days, we had the dark room.
There we go.
And we used to have to play with the chemicals and do everything in the dark and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I love that. Mm. And I kind of just left it, went to do some studying and did different things. And then 6-7 years ago, I thought, you know what? I need a hobby. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to pick up photography again. So I went to JB Hi-Fi. Bought a couple of cameras or a camera and a couple of lenses and just kit camera, very simple, Nikon, and started doing lots of courses and it just became an obsession. And I started doing more and more photography when I should have been doing other things. And then I realized this is something that I have to do now because it's obviously something that really speaks to me. Yep. And I've been working as a photographer for 7-8 years. I do a lot of corporate events, private events, corporate headshots, marketing material, anything that involves people because I love people and I love people photography.
Yeah, very nice. Did you have, before you got back into it, you know, that was something that you said you needed a hobby to do. Did you have a creative outlet of any description?
Yeah, that's a great question, man. I mean, my family's very creative. My dad was a singer, lead singer in a band. He was a guitarist. Mm. He taught me how to play. So I've always had a slightly creative outlet. My brother played the drums and as a family together, we used to jam. My dad on the lead guitar, me on the rhythm guitar, my brother on the drums. We used to drive the neighbors crazy. They said, oh, the Saul family's at it again. Close the doors. But yeah, my creative outlet was always music. And, I've always just been a creative thinker and, you know, thinking in slightly different ways and a lateral thinker really.
Yeah, very nice. So I know for me personally, I never really had a creative outlet before I discovered podcasting and doing this media thing. I'd done a fair bit of media in the past, not consistently, but just being featured in the media more than actually creating media myself. And just with the evolution of social media and the way business is working these days, it's something that I kind of was playing with a little bit like you. You sort of went and bought a camera, got a couple of lenses, did it, and I spend more time doing something that I should be spending time on other things that are really making money, but I wasn't, you know. And I decided exactly the same thing to go all in on things. But, you know, when I look back at my career and where I came from at school, I was really good at school as a straight A student.
Nice.
I never went to university, but there was no creative outlet at school for me. Yep. It was just old-fashioned science, maths, English, that type of thing.
Yep.
And when you look at kind of where I came from high school and then the careers that I found myself in the military, it's no surprise that I ended up there because of where I came from in school.
Yeah.
But then I wonder what would have happened if I had that creativity a bit earlier on in my life. It's an interesting sort of concept.
Yeah, it is. But you know what? Something that I always say, and I know that you're an ex-military person, and something that I always say is I'm fascinated why strong entrepreneurs, a lot of ex-military and ex-athletes become very strong business people and strong entrepreneurs because they have a discipline.
Yeah.
And they know what it means to do the same thing every day without thinking about other people, just getting on with it. And, you know, that also gives you a lot of, stood you in a great stead and gave you a lot of opportunities as well.
Yeah, definitely did. Definitely did. Make no mistake, it's not so much about discipline, yeah. It's self-disciplined.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you do learn that, but not, you know, I was in the military with a lot of people that were the most like lazy people you'd ever come across your entire life. And folks that haven't been in the military often think that we're all really disciplined, but they use a big carrot and stick approach. Yeah, so it's not always from within. It's not everybody that's there. But when you leave there, you don't realize that that's been embedded in you.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, and so that is something that you do carry with you. But I have seen a lot of people jettison that as well. It's like, you know what, I'm no longer in the army. I don't have to deal with that crap anymore. I'm out of here.
Yeah, yeah. What kind of stuff do they give you? A carrot? What do they give you? What do they...
It's not so much a carrot. It's more a stick in actual fact. It's like, you know... In some ways, right towards the end of a military career, and I'm not saying anything bad about it because I had an incredible time in the Australian Defence Force in two services. Right. And a lot of people don't realise that you kind of grow out of it. Right. And what you grow out of is being told what to wear and where to be.
Yeah.
And you need to wear that uniform, that hat, and be there at that time.
Yep.
What do you mean we need to be at work at 4 o'clock? Well, we're going parachuting. Yeah, but it's foggy at Richmond till 11 o'clock in the morning. Why can't we just leave like Holsworthy at like 10 o'clock?
Wow.
And by the time we get to Richmond, the fog would have cleared and we'll go jumping at midday anyway.
Yep.
And it's those types of things that just sort of start to grind on you after a little while. It's like, you know what, I'm just sick of being told what to do, where to be, the uniform and all those sorts of things. And it's like, maybe it's time to park it up. But the military has a really great way of recognizing that in people and saying, hey, maybe you need a change. Do you want a new career? Do you want to try something else? Do you want a new job? And then, you know, they get into a new job, then there's a commitment, the contract, and there's a bunch of other things that happen as well. So, you know, it's pretty good for career progression like that, but don't fall into the trap of thinking that we're all these really super disciplined robots. No, that's a long way from actually.
That's a good point. Really good point. So it's self-discipline, not so much discipline.
There it is. And there's a little bit of it that's actually embedded into you from the military, but the vast majority of it is self-discipline. But you know, any small business owner like yourself, Darren, you're required to have that self-discipline yourself. Nobody else is going to do that for you. You got to get out and hustle. Tell us about that. What was that like when you decided to?
I mean, look, everything that generally, that's my personality. I'm all or nothing, you know, a bit like the name of your podcast, Go All In. I'm all or nothing person. You know, when I binge on junk food, I'm all in. When I go on a diet, I'm all in. When I'm off a diet, I'm all in. When I'm starting something new, studying something, I'm all in. So with photography, I was all in as well. You know, I just kind of went, I did course after course after course. I was out in Chinatown on the street doing street photography, spending the whole day driving people crazy. I got arrested a few times, not actually arrested, but people were saying, what's this guy doing taking photos on the street?
Yeah.
Because you know, a lot of people didn't realize as a street photographer, you're actually allowed to take photos in public. Mm-hmm. But then a few times the cops came and said, what are you doing? I said, I'm just a street photographer. They said, can I see your photos? I said, yeah, look, it's just nothing, you know, nothing crazy. They said, all right, just tone it down.
Yeah.
So anything I did, I went all in. And as a photographer, I did the same. And then I started going all in with my marketing to build my photography business. And that's kind of what led me to what I do now as well, is I've kind of added an arm of social media and podcasting as part of my marketing strategy. Because I realized, you know, 2-3 years ago that marketing had changed. Cold calling didn't work as well as it used to. Email marketing didn't work as well as it used to. Letter drops didn't work. I said, I've got to find another way. And I started diving into and studying digital marketing and social media. And I thought, wow, this makes perfect sense for me, particularly as we move forward. So I developed my own podcast. And I started doing a lot of work around social media for my own marketing purposes as a photographer. And the results were incredible. And then now I've started to actually work with other smaller organizations to help them do the same thing.
Yeah, very nice. Very nice. And how long for the budding photographers out there? Because I Googled some stuff before I started. I Googled you, of course, as a little bit of research. But one of the things that I came across, and I'd forgotten about, I knew this, but I've forgotten about, I hadn't heard this fact for a long time, that photography is the most popular hobby in the world.
It is.
And I think with the advent of a smartphone, and I got myself one of these fancy tools the other day, and it's a Samsung Galaxy S20 Ultra. And
awesome.
Fancy fancy pantsy, right? When you're going to update your hardware, I always say go for the most expensive thing that you can afford because it'll last you a long time.
Yep.
You don't drop it. And the camera on this thing is better than some of the digital SLRs that we have here in the studio. And I take photos with it and I'm like, oh my God, anybody could be a photographer with this, but not anyone can be a photographer because it takes engagement with people. You know, I might have the world's best mobile phone camera, but that doesn't mean I can put a hat on and say that I'm a photographer and go and take photos at a wedding or at an event or something like that.
Yep.
If somebody's listening to this and they're kind of on the cusp of thinking, I love photography, I've got all the gear, I've done all the courses, I've done all that, what would you say to them to kind of encourage them?
Yeah, great question. Photography, first and foremost, is about training your eye and training your skill and training how you work with people. So photography is born, or a great photograph actually, is born before you even lift the camera to your eye or even lift the camera up here. So I would say to people, don't spend money on gear, because everybody gets sucked into buying more gear, more tripods, more lenses, more filters, more batteries, blah, blah, blah. Buy education, buy books, go and study. Train yourself as a photographer, because you can have a lot of natural talent, absolutely, but just like any creative outlet, you have to develop that talent.
Yeah.
And photography is the same. You have to develop your eye over 10,000 plus hours to really say, okay, now I can work as a photographer. Mm. So my advice is, you got to do the work. You know, it takes self-discipline, as we mentioned. You got to do the work. Don't spend money on gear. It's not about, you know, what you buy and how great you look. It's about your eye. And as you say, you can be an incredible photographer just with that if you trained your eye properly.
Yeah. 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 It's great. It's great advice. Photographers are equipment junkies. I remember, it must be close to 14 years ago now that we first had our first editor.
Yep.
The wedding photography business here on this side was just going gangbusters, and my missus would be at weddings all weekend and then she'd be editing photos all week. And, you know, be like, oh, I lost count of the amount of times I was like, we've got to start outsourcing that, honey. We've got to get that off your desk. We've got to get somebody. And eventually she capitulated and let go, because like all small businesses, she was just holding on to that element of a business so tightly. Yep. Let it go. We found an editor. And the fellow that we found, his name is Ed, and he was from Tehran. And at the time, he'd come to Australia. He's doing his engineering degree. Super smart guy. And his background's really interesting comparison between photography here in Sydney and photography in some random place on the other side of the world that you're probably never going to go to, in Tehran, in Iran, right, the capital. Yeah. And so he grew up as a young kid. My very first job was as a milk boy, and I'm dating myself a little bit, like you as the backroom guy, you know, running up and down the street, delivering milk onto people's porches. Ed's first job was as a photo editor when Photoshop first came out.
Wow.
And in Iran, listen to this, they don't just have weddings on Saturdays and Sundays. They have them every day of the week.
Right.
And so he was a busy young kid, 13, 14 years old. And the photographers would come in, and it was when digital cameras first came out, and they would dump the cards on his desk, and he would have to go through like 20 flashcards and filter like 7 or 8 weddings over a period of 2 or 3 days and edit them.
Insane.
And the guy was a machine.
Yep.
He was a machine. It was like watching, somebody play the piano.
Yep.
And you think of how you edit photos today in Lightroom, it's actually pretty easy, the levels. Yep. There's a bunch of different presets.
You could automate a lot as well,
Back in the day with Photoshop, no, there's no automation like that. Actions didn't exist back then.
That's right.
And he was like playing the piano, right? He was so quick with the shortcuts on the keyboard and with the mouse and all those sorts of things. And he really took our business to the next level.
Incredible.
Because we would give him 2 weddings from a weekend and he'd be like, finished by Tuesday.
Wow.
He'd be like, what the hell?
Wow.
And his work was like 10 times better than you could ever try and do yourself, because that's all he'd done for the last 10 years of his life.
Yep.
And he really knew what he was talking about, and everything was sort of like, whatever, what about this gear? But he was the equipment junkie. He was the, how do you say, the stereotypical photography equipment junkie.
Yep.
Everything about every single hit. And then, you know, as technology developed, you could see the settings of a camera in the software. And he would say to my missus, because I'm not the one taking the photos, I'm running the business, Susie's taking the photos. He would look at the photos and see the settings on the camera and go, why are you doing it like that? Do it like this. And he was actually training her how to set a camera up properly.
Wow, incredible.
She just didn't really know how to use the gear properly. What she knew was people.
That's right. That's right.
She knew how to take good photos of people. But over the years, I've seen Ed buy and sell gear, buy and swap gear, try this, try that, try this. And like, we've had the same gear for years. Our gear's like old, hasn't been replaced.
I'm even using a secondhand, one of my famous, my greatest lenses, my 70 to 200 is a secondhand lens that I bought off another photographer, and it's just fine. You know, I have only a few lenses. You don't need to go crazy.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing, isn't it? I don't think there's a lot of industries out there that suck you in to equipment and to massive distraction like that, like photography can. Videography is another one as well, because videography and cameras and software and things like that can be really painful. I guess the thing that I'm trying to get out there and the lesson I'm trying to share with the audience there is that don't get sucked into that, and make sure at some point when you feel like you're ready to do that, let go of the business and start bringing some people in and start doing that to help you.
Yeah. And that's a really good point, because as photographers, we are creative people and we want to retain creative control. So it's very hard for us to relinquish that control. Even me, to a point, I send off some stuff, but some stuff I have to do myself. But I'd love to talk to your wife about how she let go totally, because that's a tough one.
I didn't give her a choice, yeah? I took the flashcards and gave them to Ed.
Yep, there you go. So are you a photographer as well, as well as your wife?
Look, I guess just by osmosis, by exposure, I can take photos, right? If you came in the studio here and I put you on a stool, I could take really nice photos of you. First of all, because I've seen it done hundreds and hundreds of times and the equipment is pretty good. The lights are right. But if you took me to a wedding and go, all right, you're up.
Off you go.
I can do videography pretty well at weddings. I've done that a few times, but you don't have to talk to anyone when you're the video guy.
That's right.
That makes it really easy. You can stand off and kind of hide in the background. And I'm the B-roll guy too, by the way.
Nice.
Really hide in the background.
Nice.
But it's certainly something that it's something I have a deep interest in, and it's something that I have a passion for, the art of it. I just appreciate the art that it is. And that's what I'm saying. Like at school, I was never exposed to anything like that. And it's not till like in my late 30s, early 40s that I started to get exposed to those sorts of things, where it's like, wow, I wish I had found this earlier in my life. Yeah. It's kind of cool.
Nice.
Darren, tell me, how do you help your clients? Because I know how we help our clients as photographers on this side, but this is about you today, not about me or my business. But I'd be interested to hear how you help your clients.
Awesome. So I kind of, as I mentioned, I do a number of different things. And because I've added a few different strings to my bow, I kind of brand myself as a bit of a multimedia specialist now. So my brand name is Suspended Animation, and I do things in three parts. I provide photography services, I provide podcasting, coaching and consulting like yourself, and I provide social media or digital marketing, coaching and consulting as well. So I help my clients in three different ways, but they kind of all fit together as well, because with social media nowadays and digital, photography and images and graphics are so important as well. So my training as a photographer and how I work with images has kind of helped me to, that kind of spilled into the creative side and the way that I engage people using digital marketing as well. So, but in terms of what I do, if I break it down, in this period anyway, I mean, now I had a lot of some weddings, I had a lot of smaller events booked, but now in this COVID situation, obviously my events are all postponed and cancelled. Yep. I do a lot of work as a headshot photographer and corporate collateral marketing material. So if people want, you know, an upgrade for their website, they need new photos of their, whatever they do, documentary style or posed, they need a headshot, they need group shots. You know, I come in with my lighting gear and an assistant and we get all that done. As far as building brand, I love to, you know, one of my passions is marketing and I love psychology. So I love working with how people interact and how people behave. And that's what kind of led me into marketing. Mm-hmm. And from a digital point of view, I love testing and playing with social media and seeing what works and what doesn't work. And I've got a real passion for helping people and organizations build their brand using social media. And I bring podcasting into that because for me, a podcast is just another pillar in a wider social media marketing content strategy. You know, as you know, a podcast is such an incredible way to bring content, fresh content to your audience all the time, bring awareness about what you do in a subtle way, put yourself on a stage as a thought leader, but also collaborate with incredible guests, learn a lot, put them on a stage, and everybody wants to come on a podcast. So, you know, as I mentioned, three things really: photography, social media marketing, and podcasting. And I kind of brand myself as a bit of a multimedia guy these days.
Yeah, very nice. I love it, mate. It's you're a man after my own heart. That's the same thing that I do as well.
Absolutely, man. So. Absolutely. Love it. And, you know, the more and more you get into the creative side, the more fun it is, the more you want to do more of it. You know, your brain just starts moving into that creative realm. Yeah. And you start saying, oh, I can do this and I can do that and I can do this. It's kind of like once you turn it on, you can't turn it off. And everybody has a creative side.
They do indeed.
Everybody. There's a famous site called Creative Live. And I think his name is Chase Jarvis, who set up Creative Live. And he's written a book and he's even got a whole podcast about this fact, the fact that creativity is a muscle. We all have it, but we just have to turn it on and develop it. You know, a lot of people say, oh, I'm not creative. I don't have a creative bone in my body. I don't believe that. Everybody, some people can cook. Some people can write. Some people can, I don't know,
podcast
something can podcast.
Yeah.
Some people can build with their hands. Everybody can do something creative. And even I think Picasso said the same thing. When we were young, we're all creative. We just lose it when we become adults. So it's there, it's dormant. You just have to turn it on.
I wanted to ask you about that. It's a really good point because it's one of the points that I've got here in as a question for you today on the show was it was related to creativity and it's related to the creative nature of what you do as a photographer and as a content creator. Great. I know for me in the photography business on this side, I don't really suffer from what I'm about to ask you because I'm not dealing with the clients so much. I deal with them from a sales perspective and an after sales perspective. Yep. The actual execution of the photography in the business, that's always handled by a member of my team. From a podcasting perspective and from a digital marketing perspective, it is something that I suffer from. And I really believe that you're so unbelievably right when you say that creativity is within all of us.
Absolutely.
And it's a skill that you've got to tweak and you develop and you build it. And I feel like it's a little bit of mojo in there as well.
Yep.
Like some days is a little, I got a bit more mojo.
Yeah. Some days you're on fire and some days it's just not right. It doesn't work that day.
The way I say it is you've got to bring, as an entrepreneur, as a business owner, you've got to bring the juice. Yep. Because when you're juiceful, you're useful. You're useless, baby.
I like that.
It's a funny analogy, right? They're funny words. It's funny use of alliteration in words and things like that. And, you know, I've suffered recently. It's probably about September, October last year where I lost my mojo a bit.
Yep.
Where I was just like, you know what? This podcasting thing is like wearing me down. Like all these people and I'm not that interested in what they've got to say. All their stories seem to blend into one. Yep. And I thought maybe I just need a break. Maybe I just take a break from it. Maybe I need a holiday. Maybe I need just some distance from it to kind of fill your cup back up or something like that.
Reinvigorate a little.
Yeah. Has that happened to you along your creative career, as you say?
Yeah. Like with me, what happens generally is when I do something, as I mentioned, I'm all in. And then if it ever starts to kind of move to a point where it's losing traction, I usually just find something else to jump into.
Yeah.
Kind of just, I'm like, it's like playing Frogger, you know? I'm always jumping to the next thing. And then I'll bring it when I'm a bit refreshed and reinvigorated, I'll come back to it. That's generally how I kind of play. I'll say, oh, that's interesting. Let's jump into that. And then my brain finds something else to dive into. And then I'll bring that back in again. And then I might bring them all together. I kind of constantly playing with different things to different degrees.
Yeah, it's really important that you have that, isn't it? Yeah. And I think part of a mistake people could make there is being distracted by things that are not related to your business.
Yeah.
And hey, this shiny new idea over here, this shiny new toy over there. That's a really hard thing to pull back as a business guy, as an entrepreneur as well, right?
Definitely. I think like there's a lot to be said about that as well. Like you got to do what you love, but you also have to make sure it's viable. I mean, if if you're going to do something that is, you know, only with a market of one little percent of the world might use that service, unless you become incredibly specialized and incredibly famous, you're not really going to be able to make a living. So you got to do what you love to do and what you're good at, but you're also got to make sure that it's viable as a business.
Yeah.
I think that's so important as well.
Definitely. Definitely. Tell me, I just want to shift gears a little bit into the marketing side of it a bit, because one of the common things that I see just interviewing people throughout the BX network and talking to smaller businesses is one of the challenges that they face, the common challenge that they face is, oh my God, social media. It's so hard. It's such a time sap. It doesn't work. I boosted a post and it didn't work. All these sorts of dramas. And you know, there's a thousand things that I could say to that, you know, to help people and to solve those problems. But again, you know, this is about you today. I'm interested in your views on marketing. How have you seen marketing change, particularly digital marketing, over the last 3 or 4 years?
Oh, man. You know, if I look at, when I look every day right now, digital marketing and social media is on absolute fire, in particularly because of the coronavirus. Everybody's, you know, we're all trying to market ourselves. We all need more business. We all need more brand. Some of our businesses have pivoted a little. So we're even another reason to remarket and reestablish brand. So I see so many of my peers from all sorts of areas on social media, particularly LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram, and some podcasting constantly. But I must say that not everybody does it as well as they can do it. And the reason a lot of people just fall into the trap of thinking that social media marketing is all just about promotion, but it's not. Social media marketing is about, it's an incredible platform to reach your audience, but you have to engage your audience. If you just sell, or give people something that they've already heard or they've heard 10 times before, they don't want to hear, they're going to get bored really quickly. And this is where the creativity comes in. You have to be really creative in how you keep putting out your messaging and your content in a million different forms, whether it's written, audio, graphic, video, and do it in long form content, short form content, and keep on mixing it up so that every day your audience never gets bored. And at the same token, you're always trying to give people as much value as they can, as you can. You want to give people 80% of the time some stuff that's going to help them in their journey, not a promotional or a marketing piece of material for you. It's fine to sell. I mean, we're all making money. We're all trying to run a business and everybody needs to know what we do. But if you can limit that to 20% of the time and 80% of the time give people stuff that they need that can help them, You will increase your audience and increase your awareness about what you do and your brand tenfold, a hundredfold. And I've seen it happen because I've been doing it for the last few years.
Yeah, it's beautifully said. I think the thing for me that's changed on my side as I look at it, you know, I had an agency for, it must have been 13, 14 years or something like that. Yep. And after I kind of discovered the podcasting thing, I decided to get out of the agency and keep all of my skills selfishly for myself. Sheepishly, I help people every now and then, just like pro bono, right? I don't really care about getting paid for it. I just share my knowledge. So I'm happy to share in this format, right? In the podcasting format, because I reach a lot of people. Definitely. I think the mistake that people have made recently and the changes that I've seen in digital marketing recently are that everybody is doing the same types of things.
100%.
And one of the things that you would have seen a lot as well as the photographer and as the marketing person and podcaster as well, is that everybody's a coach.
Yep. Oh, man. Coaching is one of the fastest growing industries in the world right now.
Isn't it what, right? It's might crazy. Be the second most popular hobby in the world for people beyond photography like that.
That's right.
And, you know, I think coaches are extremely necessary people in the world. It's a very necessary profession. And, you know, it's great. No man or woman is an island. You need help to get there. Absolutely. But one of the things that I've seen consistently done wrong through digital is that people think that they can just throw up a few posts in social media, get people to a website, and get the engagement there.
100%.
But it rarely plays out like that. And so I wanted to share with the audience today and maybe share with you as well and get your thoughts on it, is at the end of the day, social media is all about engagement and about traffic. Yep. And how can you get people to engage with the content that you've got? And ideally, the engagement means clicking away from social media, getting them to your website, onto your email list, and inside of your ecosystem over there.
Exactly.
So my view is that it needs to be fast, whatever traffic strategies you're using, whether they're social media or paid strategies, it needs to be fast, scalable, consistent, and independent as well.
Yep.
And one really big error that I see people make is that they go all in, if you could go all in too much on one thing.
Yep.
So I'm all in on Facebook, or I'm all in on Instagram, or I'm yep. all in on YouTube, or whatever that might be. If you're not independent of that platform and you lose your ad account or your profile gets shut down, you're just without a business. And you need a bit of diversification in there Definitely. As well. And that's where the overwhelm seems to come from. I think people intuitively understand that they need to be omnipresent across all of those platforms, but they also don't want to be a slave to one platform, particularly if they get canceled or barred like that as well. So the other thing that I've seen change, and the thing that I see probably 98% of people that ask me, that engage with me, and again, I'm happy to share here on the BX podcast and with you as well, is people don't know how to run their retargeting strategies properly.
Yep.
And they're really missing that paid element of retargeting and building big, large retargeting pools. And part of the problem is that it costs money to get people to your website, whether that's in an ad campaign or that's in some sort of social media where you've paid a photographer to take nice photos or do nice videos for you and you've got it out there. Okay, so I've got the traffic, I've got the traction, people come to the site, and it's like me calling you saying, "Hi, Darren, I'm calling you to let you know I'm never calling you ever again." It's like, what a waste of time. You'd be like, "Oh, thanks, man. See ya."
Yeah.
You know, and unless you get them inside of a retargeting pool of some description across the Google Display Network, across all social media platforms in retargeting, Perfect Audience, AdRoll, and a bunch of other ones like that, you're really missing the opportunity to bring people back to your website for a second looky-loo. And once people are inside of that ecosystem, the next mistake I see them make is that, okay, they're on my email list. Now what?
Yep. Spam. Let's spam.
There's nothing to buy.
You
got to get them inside your ecosystem. And what I call it is I call it a hub.
Yep.
What you've got to do is you've got to develop your own little hub. So once you're on the inside of my ecosystem, there might be something for you to get there. Like, here's how to be the world's best guest on any podcast you want, or here's how you can get booked on 10 podcasts in 10 weeks by doing this. Use this script, use this outreach. This is how you do it. So now they're getting something. And once they've got that, they see something else. Then they see something else, and then there's something else to do to buy there, and then something else to buy there. And unless you've got a range of products and services that are on the inside of your hub, all the social media marketing and paid advertising in the world really don't make much difference. And it's a very rare business that I encounter, that I come across, that has their hub set up properly. And the hub is something that can feed back onto itself. And you know, the lifetime value of a customer typically in digital marketing is one sale. But the lifetime value of a customer, people are so concentrated on getting them inside of their sales funnel, where I've got a purchase for $30 and an upsell for $100 and a cross sell for $70, a high ticket thing for $450 or $1,000. But really, at the end of the day, that's still one sale.
Definitely. Yep.
And once they're on the inside of all of that, they're inside of the course that you've got there, but they're not inside of a hub where they can buy something else. Exactly. And they're not inside of the ecosystem where that needs to actually be put together like that as well. I don't know. What are you seeing as you talk?
Yeah, man, you've brought up some really, really good points. And like, there's always going to be a balance between paid advertising strategy and organic marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And from a paid advertising point of view, I totally agree with you. I think you have to have a good strategy in place and a retargeting strategy. And it's, again, it's going to be determined to do how much money you've got to put against it, because the more you spend, the more numbers you're going to hit, the better results you're going to get. And I also believe that you should have a very, very strong organic strategy. And that really feeds into what you mentioned before about building a hub. Because for me, I'm assuming when you say a hub, you mean a community or a group.
Yeah.
A group of like-minded people that know, trust, and like you, and will follow you. They're your trusted audience. They're your advocates.
You've got your tribe for sure,
tribe.
Right? your tribe could be your Facebook group, a LinkedIn group. Yep. It could be just your social media following, right? But yep. unless that tribe has got somewhere to go
yep.
to buy your products and services and to engage with you directly,
yep.
they're just a bunch of, I think of it's like a game of footy.
Yep.
Remember that when we went to the footy?
Yeah, absolutely.
You and me go to an Eastern Suburbs game on the weekend at the footy stadium, and we're watching 24 people on the field play football, and every now and then we go, "Whoa, he scored a try," or you know, we're cheering them on, but there's really not that much engagement in those places.
Exactly.
It takes a real dedicated skill set to actually create engagement in a LinkedIn group and in a Facebook yep. group and those Definitely. Types of things.
Yep.
And unless you can send those people into your hub where they can get those other things there, they just come to a game of footy every now and then and cheer on. They like something, they might comment on something, but
yep.
it rarely translates into actual real revenue.
Yeah, definitely. And what you mentioned before was a Facebook group. That is a perfect example of a great hub, because when a group of people are in your group, you can access, you can give them information, you can build more trust and credibility, you can send them to different places for different things. They're always in front of you. They can interact together. They can bring other people. So a group is very, very powerful, as opposed to, say, a page, because a page is more one-dimensional.
Of course.
But when I think of also, if you think more in metaphorical terms or psychological terms, for me, a hub is about people, an audience that you've built that knows, like, and trusts you. If people trust you, they'll come back to you. They'll refer you. They'll do all sorts of things. But if people don't trust you, they just become a one-off customer and you'll never see them again. And that's what when I work with social media and with organic social media, it's all about how can I keep giving my audience value so they know, like, and trust what I do. And that then slowly, I'm building my community, my tribe. And then, as you mentioned, you put them into a physical hub, which might be a group, or it might be a, you know, some other way that you do it. You know, there's so many different software sites and facilities out there to do these things. But it's more about thinking. It's more about the psychology behind it. It's who is my audience? How do I get them to know, like, and trust me constantly in perpetuity? And then opportunities will start to happen, whether it's offline or online, because that is the key. And a business network like BX is a perfect example of a great hub.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's another great hub. You know, you don't always have to think about things in terms of digital marketing. There are, traditional marketing is very, very important, and face-to-face networking and relationships are crucial, and even more so. A lot of people forget that you really have to marry the digital side with the person, the real side, because at the end of the day, we still buy from people and we want to be friends. We want to connect. We want to, you know, I want to talk to you like this in front of you. I don't want to just be typing a message to you every couple of days on Facebook or on LinkedIn or in an email. So if you can marry those two together, and always think about, how do I get messages to you that you're going to like, that you're going to use, that you're going to find benefit, and you're going to know, like, and trust me? That is building my community and my hub. And that's how a marketer has to think.
Yeah, it's beautifully said and well articulated, mate. And I really appreciate you sharing your insights and those value bombs here with the BX audience today. I guess one final thing that I would add, and a question I wanted to ask as well, in and around that, is I think part of the problem that people face with social media and the overwhelm that they face is they get that they have to do it. I know, all right, I've got to.
Definitely.
Darren takes the world's best photos. He's got the greatest strategies, the greatest everything. Okay, cool. And I'd go and do it, and like, crickets, nothing happens. And I think part of the reason that nothing happens there is because you're only looking at half of the picture. The other half of the picture is measurement. You have to test and measure absolutely everything that you're doing. So what I would say about that is that you need to get your analytics dialed in properly.
Yep.
So you can understand on a daily or a weekly basis, however your reporting looks, so you can understand what the cost per visitor is, what the cost per view is, what the cost per lead is. And then you can compare. I spent this time on this LinkedIn post. You know, I've got these great LinkedIn videos that I do with text along the top and subtitles, and I'm paying somebody $50 to build every video, and I'm shooting it with the world's best equipment in a studio and all this sort of stuff.
Yep.
So that video cost me $150 to produce, my time, average, outgoing freelancers.
Yep.
how much traffic came to my site as a result of that. So that's part of the 50% that people don't focus on. First of all, because they don't know how, and second of all, because it's a little bit boring, and the analysis that you do can be subjective. It's a little bit like opening the Daily Telegraph. If you ever read that thing, it's like reading cartoons and you return to your stars.
Yep.
Maybe the headlines are more true than the stars in the newspaper. You can just make it fit to what your narrative is and your bias is. So you'd be really careful in and around that. And I think one of the missing pieces of the digital marketing puzzle is understanding analytics and reporting. And I'd be interested to hear your feedback on that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, everything you do, you have to track. You have to, because again, social media is about reading behavior. Mm. So you have to see what's working and what's not working, and then find out why it's not working, or find out how you can improve it. What have I done wrong? Because social media is like part science, part art.
Yes.
It's really, it's not just a science, because 1+1 doesn't always give you 2. 1+1 might give you 5. You have to know what's happening, and there's a little bit of the subtlety to it. There's art to it. And you have to play, you have to get creative, you have to think. It's a game. It's like a big game of chess. It's a game for adults, you know, and that's why I love it so much, because it's so psychologically based, you know, because behavior is all psychology. But again, you're right. When it comes to paid advertising, you have to track everything. You have to know what's working and what's not. When it comes to not unpaid advertising on organic, you have to still look at how many views you're getting, how many people are interacting with your post, how many people are commenting. What are they saying? How are you responding? Are you helping to continue to build that, your tribe, and build that hub? Mm. Is it working? Does your audience like this particular type of content over that particular type of content? So you're constantly assessing and changing. And I just want to add one thing. A lot of people, when it comes to social media marketing, forget about the last piece of the puzzle, and that is persistence and patience. People think that you're going to find a result within a month or 2 months or 3 months, and you're up and running and you've got a multi-million dollar business. No chance. You have to do the work. You have to become good at your craft. You have to analyze, as we say. You have to get better. You have to get more creative. You have to get better as an executor on social media. And then you have to keep doing it every single day. And you have to be patient and let the results happen when they're going to happen. And it might take 6 months, it might take a year. You might still get, and you should get, little indicators along the way to say that this is working. Say, great, all of a sudden I used to put out my posts and only 2 people liked them. Now I'm getting 10 people like them, and I'm getting 500 views as opposed to 200 views. So something's happening. My audience is engaging with me. That's all you need. And every now and again, you get a quote or a comment to say, Darren, I really liked your stuff, or Robert, I really liked that post, keep it up. And then, you know, you're getting through to people. But you have to be patient, because it's a strategy. Like, digital marketing is a strategy just like any other business strategy. It's not, let's just put up a post, it's lunchtime, I'm waiting for the bus, I've got nothing else to do, let's just put up a photo and say something funny and say, there's my digital marketing for the day.
Yeah, that's, it's random. Rubbish. Yeah, it's random at best for people.
Nothing. You've got to think about this as a really serious digital marketing strategy, and execute to perfection as best you can every single day, and then be patient and the results will happen. They have no choice but to happen, but you've got to stick it out.
Totally. Couldn't agree more on the organic side. And you know, everybody wants a quick solution. Everybody's always in a hurry. Yep. And paid advertising is a solution.
Yep.
You know, but it's a rare person that will stick their hand in their pocket for $10,000 and roll the dice and see. And in my experience, I would never engage with somebody or work with somebody that never had their back end squared away or their mindset right before they were going to do that anyway. Definitely. All the money in the world doesn't make any difference unless I see people make the mistake, if only I had $5,000 to spend on advertising, I could make this work. It's like, actually, no, man. Maybe if you can go get your analytics dialed in properly, retargeting audiences done first, and we can spend $50 at a time. Can you spend $50 this week?
Yep.
Yeah, we can. Definitely. All right, well, let's get that done first and then go for it. And unless you get your house in order and you've made your bed first, you know, as Admiral William McRaven would say, you might have seen that speech in YouTube. It's kind of fun.
Yep.
Don't go with the paid advertising option. And if you're ready to do that, make sure it's fast, it's scalable, it's consistent, and you're independent of those platforms. They're definitely the kind of litmus tests that I use with something like that. And as a rule of thumb, that generally doesn't include Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, yep, or any other of those mainstream platforms. So you might be listening to this going, well, Rob, well, what is fast, scalable, measurable, independent from those platforms? People is the answer to that question.
Definitely.
So if you can work out how to get other people to engage with you, other influencers, influencer type marketing things, that will really help set your business alight. And you can then get measurable returns. Yeah. Build your retargeting pools, get people inside of your hubs, inside of your ecosystems. Yeah. And it's scalable, it's fast, it's measurable, it's consistent as well.
Absolutely. And I might just jump in and on that thought, because this is a really good time to give audience a little bit of insight into something. 100%, you know, if you're going to be doing a lot of work with paid advertising to the wider web or the wider community, it costs a lot of money, or it can cost a lot of money, and to get results, because you're constantly testing, you're split testing, you're seeing what works, you're retargeting. These things cost money. But a little insight, or a little hack that I think is really powerful for people is, as well as doing that, retarget or boost your posts to the people that like your page, because that might be a smaller community, but it's already your hub. It's your trusted audience. It's your tribe. They already know, like, and trust you through the last 2 or 3 years of work and value you've given them. And if you reap, and you can boost posts to your people that like your page for $5 a day, which is much cheaper than putting out an advertising campaign to the wider web, which you should do as well. But if you really don't have a lot of budget to do that, at least start with targeting the people that already know, like, and trust you as part of your community, and they will, your audience will grow slow and steady, and it'll grow through referrals and through connections, and it'll feed itself as well through face-to-face interactions, because people know you. So it's a really powerful way to get your message across and build your audience, spending very little amount of money a day, as opposed to a really strong, expensive marketing campaign that you need to do. So again, if you have budget, do both. But if you have a little bit of budget, maybe start with one and a little bit on the other. And it's a really effective way to build your audience a little slower, but with a great foundation.
Yeah, definitely. Good advice and good points. Value bombs left, right, and center today on the BX podcast, which is really cool. Darren, in the spirit of BX, who is an ideal referral partner for you? Who would you like to work more with to build referral relationships?
Yeah, great one. I mean, obviously, I always say, like you, I'm always looking for guests on my podcast.
Yeah.
If anybody's interested, because I know people love to have their story told, and I'm always looking for interesting guests. But apart from that, I always love to work with business coaches, because we have a very, very similar end client, mm-hmm, as well as even graphic designers, because we can, you know, that fits into my photography and my social media as well. So graphic designers, business coaches work really well for me, and anybody, of course, that wants to come and join me on an episode would only be too happy to have you.
Sounds awesome. And just tell us a little bit about that podcast. What's it called? Where can people find it?
Yeah, sure. So my podcast is called Playing with Perspective. And again, when I started the podcast, I was thinking about how could I make this term photographic, but also make it relevant to something, to the wider world and to everything else. And perspective is a word that we use in photography a lot, because it's about the perspective of how we take photos, but it can also be applied to anything in life. So I called it Playing with Perspective, and it's more of a variety show than anything else. And I love talking to loads of different people about loads of different stuff. It could be exercise, diet, business, not-for-profit, a great initiative, coaching, entrepreneurship. I've got guests from all over the place, and I'd love it, you know, and I'd love to interview you, Rob. Let's do a podcast together. Mm-hmm. And you can find that on Apple Podcasts or on Podbean, which is my podcast app. But otherwise, just jump on my website, which is suspendedanimation.com.au, and you'll find the links to everything. As a social media guy, you can click out to everything from there.
All right. Sounds awesome. Darren, it's been an absolute pleasure having you here on the BX podcast today, and to go pretty deep in some of that marketing and that photography stuff. That was good fun. I really enjoyed that. I can't let you leave the show without putting you in the BX podcasting hot seat. Ready for a little bit of fun?
All right. I'm ready.
Well, people come on over here to learn how to do things faster. And I think we gave them some stuff today, just kind of through the conversation that we have. But have you got a couple of hacks or accelerators, maybe one or two things that people could apply today listening to the BX podcast after they finish with us here and they're like, okay, I'm going to go and do that. What would be the one or two things that they could do?
Yep. In terms of just the wider business success.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah, great. I mean, a few things. I could go on and rattle off 100, but I'll give you a couple. First one, dive in, start. Don't procrastinate. Everybody's always talking about, oh, I'm about to do this. I'm about to launch that. I'm just thinking about that. I'm talking to this person about that. Or, you know, I'm in the strategy phase. And then 6 months down the track, they're still there. So start. Just start whatever it is you got to do. Start and learn from the feedback you get along the way. You know, the quickest way to get anywhere is to just make the first step.
Yeah.
You know? I think it was it Mao Zedong or one of the famous Chinese emperors says, a journey of 1,000 miles starts with one step.
It does indeed. Yeah.
And you know, you just got to start. You know, so that's number one. And number two, be patient. You know, these things take time, but enjoy the journey. Have fun along the way and meet some great people, but be patient and be persistent, you know. And the third thing would just be give people value. Give people as much value as they can and try and establish yourself as a person that is full of integrity, ethical, valuable, person that you can trust. And, you know, that will just bring you opportunities that you wouldn't have dreamed of. You know, so three little easy hacks there.
Three little simple hacks anyone could implement into their day. Beautiful. Hey, what's the best piece of business advice that you've ever received?
Oh, let me think. You're putting me on the spot now. Best piece of business advice. I would probably just say, keep your cost structure as low as you can. Because in particular,
you win in business if you do that.
Oh, yeah. Particularly in these times, it's taught us that, if nothing else, you've got to keep your cost structure as low as you possibly can and not take on more than you can chew or more than you can, you know, maneuver very quickly out of, at the same time as doing the best you can to build your business. But I think your cost structure is really important, and a lot of people forget to really think about their cost structure. They think about how they can make money. But they have to remember, just keep an eye on your cost structure, because that's what's going to kill you in the end if things happen and, you know, your revenue starts to drop a little bit.
Yeah, well said, well said. What's a last one for a little hot seat here? What's a skill that you're working on now that you haven't quite mastered yet?
Oh, let me think. I would say probably just my general pursuit of getting better and better with digital marketing and even podcasting. Mm-hmm. Just to continue to learn, to continue to grow. There's never, you know, you never know everything. You know, speaking to you today, I've just learned as much as I have speaking to lots of other people, because I've got your insight into things. And I'll take that into my mind and I'll think, oh yeah, how can I apply that to what I do? So it's really just continue to learn, continue to grow, continue to talk to people, and continue to practice and practice and practice. And it just builds. It's a never ending journey. You never become perfect. It's a never ending journey. You have to just keep on learning and learning from other people.
Yeah, beautifully said. Well done. Well done. And again, just remind the audience for us today, if they want to connect with you, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, sure. So easy. Just go to my website, suspendedanimation.com.au. Or you can jump on LinkedIn and all the BX guys, you know, you can jump on the BX hub as well, or the BX website, and I'm on there. But, you know, I wouldn't be too hard to find.
Excellent. Too easy. And if you're listening to this podcast, just take a little peek at your phone, and all of the links to Darren's website and his socials are right there. So you're not going to have to go digging around in Google for you. They're right there. So nice and simple. Mate, thank you so much for coming on the BX podcast today. It's been an absolute pleasure to host you here and have a bit of fun, have a bit of a laugh and talk about some deeply geeky, nerdy marketing stuff and photography. That was fun. Absolutely. Have you got a parting shot or some parting wisdom for us before we let you go today?
Parting wisdom. Well, you're drawing out trying to get all the value out of me today. Let me think. Let me dig deep. Parting wisdom would just be, guys, every day, just get out there, learn from whatever you did the day before and just keep going forward. You know, and it's not, every day is not going to be fantastic. You're not going to get quick. You're not going to get fantastic wins every day, but you know, you plant those seeds. Every day, if you can just plant a few seeds, they'll start to grow and opportunities will come from areas and directions that you never even saw coming. So you just got to keep going out there, keep doing it every day. It's a new day. Get out there, have some fun, keep positive, and you know, the world is your oyster.
Beautifully said. Darren Salt, thank you so much for coming on the BX podcast. Been an absolute pleasure, mate. We look forward to speaking with you soon. It's bye for now.
Thank you, Rob.